Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Columbia researcher Ruth DeFries is the author of 2014's The Big Ratchet, How Humanity Thrives in the Face of Natural Crisis. She speaks tonight at the McRory Gardens Education and Visitor Center in Brookings. The event, which is free, open to the public, is part of the Virginia and J. Edward Holtry Distinguished Lecture Series. DeFries sees human creativity as key to survival as we face a growing population and a changing climate. I was told she had reworked tonight's presentation in light of the recent presidential election, so I started by asking her whether the election of Donald Trump had altered her views on what the future holds regarding climate change.
Well, I have an optimistic view of humanity and nature, and I'm maintaining that optimistic view. I do think we may have a few bumps in the road, but I will continue to remain optimistic. And one of the ways we see that humanity has progressed over the long term is that we've used science and technology sometimes to our detriment and often to our benefit. So science is very fundamental to who we are and the progress that we can make.
What is the conversation? I was looking at your book this morning, and it starts out in the prologue with this moment of sort of despair of scientists sitting in a vanishing forest and wondering what happens next. Are we doomed? And then goes on to, like you say, more of an optimistic conversation. So what kind of questions should we be asking ourselves right now about climate change, about what comes next for this country and for the world?
Well, I think one very important question to ask ourselves is how do we build on the progress that we have made? One concerning aspect that bedevils us, regardless of which side you might take on partisanship, is that we seem to be in a world where facts are optional and evidence is optional, but facts really do matter. The air doesn't depend on ideology. The cleanliness of our food and our water doesn't depend on what ideology one has. It depends on the facts and what we're putting into that air and how we're growing that food. So in the long term, we do need to base our decisions on evidence and facts, and we do need to have a society that is based on evidence. And this period where we're in, where it seems there's so much information but so little ability to discern what is actually based on evidence and what is based on ideology, I think is something that we need to think very long and carefully about as a society as a whole.
What are some of the key facts, big picture facts, that matter right now?
Well, there's been a lot of progress in this country on the most fundamental issues that everybody cares about. Everybody wants a clean environment for themselves and for their children and for their grandchildren, clean air, safe water, foods that are free of contaminants, not being exposed to toxic waste. These are things that everybody cares about, and there has been tremendous progress over the last few decades on these basic environment that we live in. And it's easy to forget that it really was not very long ago that people were breathing very dirty air in our cities, and waterways were very, very polluted and catching on fire. And we need to maintain that progress and move forward and continue to make progress.
From a global standpoint, what are some of the facts that are important to focus on right now?
Well, climate change is one of them. I think the majority of Americans understand that climate change is real. They see it in their everyday lives. They feel it in their communities, and again, that's something that the atmosphere doesn't really have an ideology. The atmosphere just knows what is being put into it and knows the basic the basics of physics, which is if you put more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, it will change the climate. And the rest of the world is moving forward, and it remains to be seen whether the U.S. will take its leadership position on that.
Right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit as the United States in a leadership position there, because I think one of the challenges Americans have is, you know, what are other countries doing to step up compared to what we're doing to step up? Do you think that's a legitimate concern from American citizens?
I think that is a very legitimate stance. This is a global issue, and it can only be resolved globally with everyone participating. If you look back historically about who is responsible for the emissions, it certainly falls within the industrialized world. If you look forward, the emissions are coming from many countries, including the emerging economies. There's been quite a bit of some progress in reducing emissions, and some of that is common sense. The switch to natural gas has contributed to a leveling out of emissions, and that's economics. That's just because it has become a cost-effective way for energy is with natural gas. There's been in China, for instance, a focus on reducing emissions, and that has other benefits as well. For example, with the coal power, reducing emissions from coal power plants also helps with their problems of air pollution. There are multiple reasons why reducing emissions may benefit society regardless of the climate aspect.
You've said that it's not binary, where it's the environment or it's people, because people are part of the environment. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, somehow in our in the way that society has been portrayed these issues, it's a trade-off. If you protect the environment, then people are at a disadvantage through losing jobs or through costs to reduce emissions. But at the heart of it, a healthy environment is fundamental to everyone. So this distinction, I think, is a very false distinction, because the environment is so fundamental to our health and the health of other species and the world that most people care about, which is having a healthy world for themselves and their children.
Can we sort of unpuzzle the challenges of the future and work toward meeting those challenges by looking at history and looking at human impact on the planet in the past? And if so, let's talk about that a little bit and some examples that we can turn to.
Yes, so that's the pattern when I was writing the book that I'd be talking about somewhat in the visit here. It's what is our pattern if we step back and look at long-term history of how humans have interacted with the natural world. We are very, very innovative and very, very adept at manipulating nature to our benefit, and it certainly has benefited our species. But what I found in this very long-term look at history is that we figure out a very clever way to manipulate nature. Just take domestication of plants and animals for crops 10 or 12,000 years ago, just for an example. And that inevitably has some kind of benefit, increasing the number of people that can be fed, but then will lead to some kind of problem, like with the domestication of agriculture, we have the spread of infectious diseases like measles and polio and so on. So we have some kind of benefit, but then that creates some kind of problem, which then creates the drive for innovation to solve that problem, which then leads to some benefit, and then that creates some other kind of problem. So we're in this continual dance where we have some kind of solution which which solves an immediate problem, but then leads to another problem, and then we have another solution. So we're perpetually in this. So even with climate change, any solution that we come up with for alternative ways of energy, for example, has its own set of problems. So we see, you know, even solar energy is not free from problems. It needs the rare earth minerals, and it needs space and so on. So one solution is just going to create another problem, which is going to create a drive for another solution. And we're always in that pattern. So that's the pattern I tried to trace over the course of civilization.
Can we innovate fast enough to keep up with our impact?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. We're still here. So some of the projections in the past about how we are doomed and our population is going to outstrip our resources have not come to fruition. So in our experiences so far, we have been very innovative in getting ourselves out of the problems that we create. Whether that applies into the future, we can't assume so. Our history suggests that we're pretty darn good at it. But that really depends on how we apply ourselves to solving problems. And we have such a fast pace in the world that we live in today, both in creating problems and in the ideas and innovations to solve them.
What are some of the pathways to a useful innovation? And I'm specifically thinking about environmental activism. Is this a useful way to sort of create innovation and solve a problem, or is it outmoded, and are there more useful paths?
Well, I think everyone is involved in these issues to the extent that they can be and that their circumstances allow them to be and how they can be, what makes sense for them. So that's fantastic to be aware and active and involved in the issues that we care about. Again, it goes back to having a society where we can discriminate facts and evidence from information that might appear like facts and evidence, but is really more ideologically driven. And that can be true from the right and the left and from any way. So we need, people who are smart, and people are smart, to be able to discriminate what is actually based on evidence so that they can determine what it is that they want to be active in. We need a creative communities that can develop their own kinds of solutions. We need creative scientific enterprise that can work on problems. And I have a lot of faith in the power of people to be innovative when they're faced with problems, if the system allows them to be.
When I listen to you talk, my mind keeps going back to education, schools, universities, science education. How big of a part does educating the next generation of scientists, lawmakers, farmers, how much does education play into solving these problems in the future?
Oh, I think education is absolutely the bedrock of a society that can deal with the really tough decisions that we'll need to make. And this is education not in the sense of facts and, you know, memorization and knowing a lot of things. Education in the sense of critical thinking, appreciating different perspectives, asking the right questions to be able to sort out fact from ideologically driven evidence, or so-called evidence. And we cannot educate our young people to have the knowledge that they're going to need for the future, because we don't even know what that is.
Right, <yeah. laughs>
We can just look at education as helping people be thoughtful and critical and good consumers of information.
What else are you bringing to South Dakota in your time with us that's a message that might be relevant to South Dakotans themselves, to a state that has a very soft agriculture economy right now and is largely ag-based?
Well, I think the message is the same, that when it comes to healthy water, healthy air, food safety, free from toxics, these issues about living in a clean and healthy world for our children, these are issues that transcend red, blue, purple, green, brown, whatever. These are issues that are so fundamental to everyone's life and their future that we're together.